Okay, if everybody will, I am strapped for time, as I usually am. If the ladies wouldn't mind moving in, just to make it a little easier for you. And the gentlemen on this side to move into the center. What? You'll hear me. Oh, it's picking up from there. I'm not used to microphones. On Shabbos, there's no microphone. Okay, if everybody, I'm sure everybody can hear. It just makes it easier. You don't want to move in? There's supposed to be a sense of achdus today or something, you know. So, but I have to be very careful and watch the clock. I just came from doing a levaya, and unfortunately, this is the lot of the rabbi of a shul. I have to watch the time because I must finish on the appropriate time because I have unfortunately another levaya to do. There's so many in the community today. For some reason, it's ominous on Tisha B'Av. So I want to begin. I will probably have to eliminate some of the things. There's so much to be said, so much that needs to be said, especially with what's going on in Eretz Yisrael today. I'm not going to make officially any political statements, except by what I say, obviously, I have certain feelings and beliefs, and you will draw your own conclusions. If you'd like to take some of these concepts and ideas and transpose it to what's happening today, I leave that for you to decide if there is any connection or any relationship. I remember after being on a panel discussing Israel once, many times, and of course the settlements and disengagement and so on, and I made certain comments and the things that I feel and I believe, and I'm sure others do as well. Others don't, difference of opinion. But after I got through, a couple of people came up to me and said, "Rabbi, you're one of these zealots, these militant zealots, these ultra left, right wing, Orthodox, whatever or whatever." And I know why they use that term, simply because there was a political leader from Israel here in Toronto not so long ago, and he made a speech, and so they make short shrift, that all those who are opposed to the government position is a zealot. And somebody actually said to me, "It's because of people like you, the temple, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed." So suddenly I became accused of destroying the Beit HaMikdash, which was something I've been accused of a lot of things. That's not one of those things I've been accused of. So I began to do a little, you start looking into it, a little research. So I want to share with you a few thoughts. And that is, if we were to take a survey right now and ask everybody who's here, and I guess everyone who's not here, but that if you know anything, of course, about the Beit HaMikdash, Tisha B'Av, why we are here today, and it is appropriate that we do learn about those events and to learn Torah through learning about the events, because many Torah scholars were killed by the Babylonians or the Romans. And that's part of what we read today and part of the Kinos, all the great tzaddikim and Talmudic scholars who were killed on Tisha B'Av. So it's appropriate that we learn Torah to kind of make up for that. You ask most Jews, why was the Holy Temple destroyed? And the answer will be the two famous words, Sinat Chinam. I did not have the opportunity to hear the video from Rabbi Fran before, unfortunately. I'd like to hear him. But I have a feeling did he speak about that? I don't know. But Sinat Chinam, that's the usual answer of why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And also because there were zealots and militants and people of that nature. These are the reasons generally given why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So I'd like to go through and see if that's really true. Or is it just something we say and take for granted that that's the reason the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? We'll go through some of the Gemaras. I'll try to be quick. Some of the Rishonim, the Rambam, the Ramban. The Masechtas Gittin, the Gemara in Gittin does speak about the fact and gives the impression that the Churban, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, during the actual days of the destruction, that there was a struggle between zealots, between certain Jews within the capital city, within Yerushalayim, and the Gemara describes how they went into the storehouses and ransacked the storehouses, not the Romans, but the Jews. Some of the quote, the zealots, and the city fell, the city of Jerusalem fell to the enemies. Okay, that's where they get the idea. If somebody was looking for a source that the zealots did it, so there is this incident recorded in the Gemara of Gittin. I want to read to you what William Shire says. William Shire was an author, and William Shire wrote a number of things, a historian, and he is very famous of what he wrote, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, Nazi Germany, Yamach Shemam. But he wrote other things. And he also wrote a 1,000-page book on the collapse of the Third Republic. And he was speaking about France. In the spring of 1940, in a matter of 5 weeks, France fell, and France was a superpower in those days. If you know your history, World War II history, and they fell within 5 weeks. And they, in those days, they had the most guns, the most tanks, the famous Maginot Line that would never be crossed, the strongest fortifications ever built by humanity. And the Germans ran over in 5 weeks. They conquered it. Now you have to understand this. The Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto held off the Nazi machine longer than the entire French government, the entire French armed services. Think about that and assimilate it into your mind. The Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto with nothing except homemade bombs or whatever you want to call it, explosives or whatever they can get their hands on, held off the Germans longer than the entire French armed forces did of Nazi Germany. That's an aside. That's, I think, of an interesting historic note. So the question is, how did that happen? How did mighty France fall? And that's the nature of the book that William Shire wrote. And he says, and I quote, I don't usually like it, but I think it's interesting. He says, quote, "A great nation, though it experiences the worst of luck, does not suddenly collapse out of the blue. The seeds of its ruins planted long before the threads that lead to the ultimate disaster, and can be traced back." This was particularly true in the case with the Third Republic, France. The seeds can be seen planted during the 19th century. The threads are not hard to pick up and followed. France, it is true, fell as a result of one battle that raged for weeks, 5 weeks in the spring and summer of 1940. That's his introduction. But as Montesquieu, the famous Montesquieu, observed, quote, "If the hazard of a battle that is a particular cause ruins a state, there was a general cause which determined that this state had to perish from a single battle." In other words, it's not the immediate cause that destroys a nation, but there is an overwhelming, there are a bunch of, there's general causes, and it takes one sort of the camel to, the straw on the camel's back to bring it to its ultimate conclusion. What's interesting also about this book is that he traces the fall of France back to the latter part of the 20th century, latter part of the 19th century, to the Dreyfus case, which is kind of poetic justice with French and its treatment of Jews. If you read some of the keynotes today and what the French did to people in the 13th century, if you didn't read that part, and we all read it, those who were here in the shul, then you go back and you read it, you'll get an understanding of what the French did and why there's so much hatred and anti-Semitism in France, even to this day. So he traces it back to the Dreyfus, the famous Dreyfus case of a Jewish corporal in the French army who was accused with treason, unjustly, of course, and this created such tension, he says, amongst the army corps and so on, and they never recovered. They never recovered from it. And he writes, and that's his thesis, that in the 1940s, when the Germans, the Nazis, were coming in, French generals and the leaders of the army, nobody would talk to nobody. They wouldn't talk to each other, and therefore the German armies just marched in. They marched in and took over France. And because one wouldn't talk with the other, this one, it sounds like today with the CIA and the FBI, that they had some inclination about Arab terrorism, but nobody talked to each other. And then 9/11 resulted. Now they're saying, we had the information, but we didn't reveal it. A to B to C. This is apparently what happened with the French government, the French army, during the days of the 1940s. So, having said that, in other words, what I'm driving at is that there are always other causes. And it's not so simple. You make a blanket statement. You know, why was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Sinas chinam. Remove sinas chinam. Everybody will be happy. You'll see that's part of it, obviously, but that's not the entire story. I'm going to go over with you quickly, and I have to do this quickly, and I apologize. What the Gemara says? Go back to the source. What do the Gemara say? Because you will see that there are problems. First, the first Gemara is in Daf Yuma, Besechtes Yuma Daf Tes. That's the Gemara in Yuma, page 9, Daf Tes. You can check it. The Gemara says, and that's where we get it from. Mikdash Risha Mepnei Charev. Why was the first Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Mepnei Shloisha Dvarim Shoy. Because of three things that are cardinal sins that the Jewish people committed during the first Beis HaMikdash. Avodah Zarah, idol worship, Gila Arayos, immoral sexual behavior, adultery and so on. Shfichas Damim, murder, killing each other. Avo Bayasheni, but the second temple, Shehoi Oiskim Batorah, but they were studying Torah, B'mitzvahs, Gmilut Chasadim, they did good things to each other, they didn't murder each other, there was no immorality. Mepnei Machor, why was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed? So the Gemara answers, and that's where we get it from. Mepnei Shehoi Sabai Sina Sina, because they couldn't get along with each other. They hated each other, they spoke evil one against the other. And the Gemara says, which one is worse? Of these things, like the three cardinal sins, that you know, idolatry and murder and immorality and so on, and sina skinam. You have choices. Which is worse? Gemara says bira tachiyach. The very fact that we have a Beis HaMikdash the second time, that's your answer. He says shechazol rishonim v'loychazol achronim. First Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, but it was replaced with a second temple. But when the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we're still waiting. Which means that what happened in the days of the second Beis HaMikdash was more severe than the first Beis HaMikdash, because it was never replaced. Therefore, you can see what sin as chinam, hatred, just unfounded hatred amongst Jewish people, what it does to each other. That's the statement of the Gemara in Yuma. And that's where we get it from. So I'm not belittling this idea of what sin as chinam can do to us. We have a long history of that. But the Gemara in another place says it's much more than that. It's much more. And I will trace it with you very, very quickly. The Gemara Shabbos, and you can look it up. You know, everybody has an art school today, so everybody can make itself available. The Gemara Shabbos, Kuf Yutes, page 119. Kuf Yutes on the base, the Gemara says, Omer Abaya says, Lechover Yerushalayim, Jerusalem was destroyed, Elo Bishvil Shechililu et HaShabbat. Jerusalem was destroyed because they did not observe Shabbos properly. Shenemar, he brings down a sentence in Yecheskel and Yezir, Umish Besoysai Halimu Eneim, the Echal Besoychom, they turned away from my Sabbath and I became profaned in their midst. So this Amora, Abaya says that it took place because of Chilush, because they didn't observe Shabbos. Secondly, Omer Abavua, second opinion, L'chov Yerushalayim, Jerusalem was destroyed, Shebitlu Kriyash Shema, Shachris V'Yarvit. They didn't recite Shema Yisrael at its proper time. Like somebody asked me in Shul on Friday nights when we have the early minyan, the 7 o'clock, so we always announce after services, don't forget, when it gets dark, repeat the Shema. Because it's not dark, so you can't say Shema yet at night. It's not the appropriate time. You have to know the right time in the morning at night. That's why Jerusalem was destroyed. What does that mean? So the Gemara quotes a sentence in Yeshayo, Isaiah the prophet, Shenemar, because it is written in Isaiah, chapter 5, I think, Hoy mashkime baboiker sheicho yudafuni me'afrei baneshef yayin yadlike. Woe to those people who rise early in the morning and pursue old wine, that linger late into the night until the wine inflames them or consumes them. Which basically what they're saying was that the Jews then had no concept of prayer, of Kriya Shema, of accepting God into your life. All they were interested was, in Yiddish they say, Zom Galeipta Chazer Shuntug. If you speak Yiddish, you understand that. They lived the life of Riley. You know, drinking, music, have a good time. What? Shema in the morning, Shema at night. What are you talking about? It's not interesting to me. I want to have a good time. And basically, that's how they lived their life. So because of that, he says, the Beis HaMikdash, because it says, after the drinking, morning and night, It's also written in the Torah, Lachem Gola Ami Mibli Das, and it says, therefore my people have gone into exile for the want of knowledge. They were too stupid to understand the priorities of life. And therefore, they paid the price. Another opinion. Each one deserves very deep analysis. Lechorba Yerushalayim, Omar Rav Hamnuna, Rabbi Hamnuna says, Lechorba Yerushalayim, Elo Bishvil, Jebitlu Botinoikis Shobeis Rabban. Jerusalem was destroyed because they diverted school children from their Jewish education. I can speak till tomorrow about that. But, you know, Jewish education, they didn't care. It was diluted, the little bit that they learned. They felt it was unimportant, probably too expensive. And they blamed probably UJA and everybody else because they're not supporting education. And it's their fault, not my fault. I'd rather have a big car and a big house. Why should I have to worry about Jewish education? And it's free in the public schools. And because they neglected educating their children, that's why Jerusalem was destroyed. That's his opinion. Omar Ula comes another one. We've already been through three opinions. Omar Ula, number four. Lechorbo Yisholayim, Elam Ipnesh Lohoyo Lahem Boishes Ponim Zem Izeh. They have no shame. Rabbeinu Bachai, again, this deserves a shiur, a whole shiur. Rabbeinu Bachai in Choveis Al Vovai speaks about that if a society has no shame, that's the first thing you see in the Torah. Adam and Eve had shame, and therefore they had to be clothed after they ate from the Eitz Hadas. If there's no shame, the person that Yehovah's voice goes so far as to say that if the book Rabbeinu Bachai, Judaism of the Heart, he says, if there's no shame, nobody will ever do chesed. Why do people do chesed? Kind things. Right? There's a certain sense of social pressure. You know, somebody new comes to town, a visitor, somebody, oh, I should take him to the house. It's not nice. It's not nice not to do something nice for another person. So you do things that are nice. He says, if there's no busha, people don't care what other people think, chesed would never be done. Society would collapse. And they had no, it says, no boishes ponim. In those days, they had no fear of anybody else's feeling, and they had no shame in anything. Do whatever you want, everything is fine, doesn't matter. And again, they quote the prophet Yirmiyahu, hey, voishu kisa, eva osu gam boishu le voishu, they should have been ashamed, for they committed abominations, yet none of them were ashamed. You know, it's bad enough that a person doesn't observe Shabbos, but today they throw it in your face, like, you know, they walk openly, you know. I mean, it's one thing, my father was showing me, used to tell me the difference between Europe and America. He used to call Canada America. To him, everything was one. So he said the difference between Canada, between Europe and America was, in Europe, in his shtetl, on Shabbos, if somebody happened to be smoking and he saw a religious Jew, he walked across the street. In America, he meant Canada, Montreal, I'm from Montreal, you walk in the streets, they're smoking Shabbos, good Shabbos, and he's blowing in your face. You know, a person wants to smoke, I'm not a policeman, I can't follow people around, but a little bit of, you know, a little bit of dignity, a little bit of shame, what you're doing is, you know, I thank God, no, less people smoke anyway today, so maybe that's a bad example. But if there's no shame, society collapses, he says that's led to disruption. Opinion number five. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak says, "Lechorba Yerushalayim ela bishvil shehushvu katan v'gadol." There was no respect for elders. There was no respect for. In other words, everybody was a president. Everybody was a prime minister. Everybody was a rabbi. Everybody's the same. It's like Korach, the story of Korach in the Torah. Kulam kedosh. We're all holy. We're all the same. And if everybody's the same, no one has any intrinsic thing to offer. Because I'm not better than you, you're not better than me, you have nothing to offer me, I have nothing to offer you. We're all the same. Nobody deserves any recognition. And again, they quote sentences, everybody thinks he's a Kohen. Isaiah, Yeshayahu HaNavi said, everybody's a Kohen. In other words, everybody thinks he's great, he's holy, he's religious, and nobody has anything to offer. And a nation, or any nation or society that doesn't esteem greatness in people, to see greatness in other human beings, then great people will wither. I mean, the concept of greatness within a human being, the ability, the potential to be great, will just wither away. So he uses, Rav Yitzchak uses that as the reason why the Beis HaMikdash, or Jerusalem rather, was destroyed. Another opinion, number six. Omer Rav Amram, V'reid the Rav Shimon bar Abba, Omer Rav Shimon bar Abba, Omer Rav Chanina. In other words, just in the name of Rav Chanina, Lechor bar Yerushalayim, Jerusalem was destroyed. Why? Elo b'shmil shloi hoichichu zeh zeh. Nobody gave admonition to anyone else. Nobody, you know, the mitzvah, hoichiyach, toichiyach, es amisem, you should, there's nothing wrong. It depends how you do it. Chofetz Chaim has a whole sefer. It's very sensitive. But if somebody does something wrong, you have to say it's wrong. If not, you're becoming part of the problem, not the solution. And if it's wrong, you shouldn't be afraid. You have to speak up. You have to say, whether it's governments, whether it's family, whatever, you have to do it in a nice way, not to offend. But if you allow things that are wrong and not to say anything, then law and order collapses. And then and everything becomes permissible. Situational ethics and everything develops out of that. And it's and leads to destruction, according to Rav Chanina. The seventh opinion, Omer Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, that's one of my favorites. They embarrassed demeaned scholars. They demeaned scholars. You ever walk in the streets of Yerushalayim, in Geula, in Meir Sharim, or in Bnei Brak, there's always posters hanging. And in these posters, there's always some Rebbe or Rosh Yeshiva or Rabbi who's being publicly ridiculed because of disagreements in certain philosophies or in policy or whatever it might be. So they hang up posters, you know, disagreeing with each other and destroying and ridiculing and so on. A lot of these posters hang up all over the cities. Here we don't see such things, thank God, not yet. And when you, of course, when you undermine Talmidei Chachamim, you undermine scholars and the Rabbonim and so on, then there's no point to listen to anything they have to say. And therefore, again, everything is hefker. You can do whatever you want. And usually the people, if you look at these posters in Israel, it's always anonymous. And nobody ever signs their name to it. Nobody has the guts to say, I so-and-so say, Rosh Yeshiva and this Yeshiva is ABC, whatever. If you're going to say it, put your name to it. No, they're all anonymous. They're all very brave in their anonymity. And this is so they scoffed, and that's what happened in days of the Churban Beis Hamikdash. They laughed at the prophets, especially in the first Beis Hamikdash. Prophets, even we were today in one of the kinnis, you know, one of the prophets, Chilkiyo, he was killed. One of them, there was actually killed on Yom Kippur by other Jews. The prophet, they murdered. We think I remember, and again, this is an aside. When Yitzhak Rabin, all of a sudden, when he was assassinated, Yitzhak Rabin, and I heard people saying, they were saying to me, it's horrible, it's terrible. It was. God forbid, we should ever experience, we should never live to see that again. And people were saying to me, never happened in Jewish history. How can such a thing happen? I said, boy, these people know nothing about Jewish history. They know nothing about Jewish history. It's one of my big beats. I've said it in Shul a million times. We all know the prime ministers of Canada, the presidents of Israel, or the presidents of the United States, the kings. We have to learn as kids, the kings and queens in England and Britain. Yeah. But our own Jewish history, I mean, we've had prophets that were assassinated, were kings who were killed and assassinated. And unfortunately, Yitzhak Rabin was not the first, but I do hope it's the last, God forbid. But this is what happens when you ridicule and you undermine leadership. This is number seven that I just said. Number eight, the Gemara says, Lechorva Yushalayim. Rava says, Omar Rava, Bishvil Sheposku Mimeno Anshe Amona. Because people began to lose trust in each other. There was no more truth telling. When you lose trust in each other, whether it's personal relation, family relations, marriage relations, society. I mean, all of society is the basis of trust. A certain element of trust. I pick up a telephone, I trust somebody's on the other side of the line. You know, I mean, as silly as that, but there's a lot of element of trust. When trust in a society doesn't exist, again, it disintegrates and crumbles. Now, if you noticed one thing about all of these, I've given you eight other opinions. Not one of them said, Sinat Sinam. Not one of them said, the zealots. It's interesting. No Sinat Sinam and no zealotry. I gave you that whole list. Now I'll give you a ninth, number nine. The ninth one is the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Gemara in Bava Metzia says, Daf Lamed, Leichorba Yerushalayim, Jerusalem was destroyed. Elo Shemidu Dineim Al Din Torah. Jerusalem was destroyed. It's a very famous Gemara because they went, and we're going to come across this again. They matters were decided according to the literal letter of the law. And in some cases, that's proper and appropriate, and you have to do it. But sometimes when you're dealing with human relations, laws, and events that take place with people, you have to be somewhat flexible. The halacha allows this flexibility. And you can't be, you know, like black and white. And there are shades of gray, sometimes even in halacha. You have to know how. You have to know when to apply it. You have to know, you know, and so how to analyze it and so on. But you can't go... Oh, and it's interesting. They were so concerned with the exact letter of the law, and that's all. Nothing else counted without taking human events into consideration. You know, it's like my famous Gemara that speaks about the person who's leper. You know, a chosen and a sheva brachas. The chosen got married, you know, 7 days of celebration. He contacted the goyim tzaras, you know, what we call in English, for lack of a better term, leprosy, which it isn't, but that's, you know, lashon hara and so on. So he comes to the kohen. The kohen was the doctor, and the kohen says, looks at him, and he knows he's a chosen. He's a groom. He's celebrating. He just got married. Everybody's entitled to have sheva brachas and to be happy and so on. So now what he's going to do? You're tomei. You're unclean. You have to get out. You have to separate from the camp. So the kohen was allowed to tell him, you know what? Like a good doctor, come back next week again. We'll look at it again. You know, doctors today, come back and, you know, take a pill and come back next week. And this is what apparently some people don't understand that halacha, you can do that, and that someone would argue, but that's not the letter of the law. The law says he's tomei, send him out of the camp. But the halacha understands you're dealing with human beings. I mean, you're dealing with people, you're dealing with human beings. The halacha allows you at certain times to be, quote, flexible. I'm using that term very carefully, not to be misunderstood. Because halacha is still the halacha. But beinodem lechavero, laws between people, you're dealing with human beings. Human beings are angels, we're not perfect, and therefore you have to take certain things into consideration. So the Gemara says in Bava Metzia, they were too exact. That was part of the cause of the destruction. And again, Siras Chinam, the Siras Chinam is not mentioned. Okay, so that we'll put that a little bit to the side now. So now you have all of these different reasons. A whole list of them, and Shabbos, and this, they didn't care, they weren't embarrassed, they didn't shame for you, I mean, the whole list of things. And it's interesting, those Gemaras don't even deal with Sin Aschinam. It's a different Gemara, different approach. So let's look at the Rambam. I want to share with you what the Rambam has to say. You'll be amazed. The Rambam, and I hope you have the time, because those who know me in the shul, I mean, if I, you know, Shabbos or Gadol can go 2 hours instead of one, but I really don't have the time now, so I can do the best I can, and my inability to curtail things. Rav Yochanan, we'll go through a Rambam, the Ramban, hopefully we'll have time. But the Rambam wrote a letter. He was asked by the French community, Igeret HaKoychovim, the French community in the days, the Rambam wrote him a letter and asked him his opinion on astrology. And Chachmei Tzorfat, they called. And he wrote a whole opinion on astrological concepts. And the Rambam is unbelievable. I mentioned one of the shiurim we had, that the Rambam himself writes, he was the doctor for the Sultan. You know, he worked all day in the palace. Then he came home 11 o'clock at night. He saw patients in his waiting room as a doctor would, the Rambam, in the 12th century. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, when he was finished with his medical work, he sat down and he learned and wrote Torah. 2 a.m. Think about it. We think we're, you know, 2 a.m., we're all, you know, turning to our left side. That's when he started to write. That was his day. That's what the Rambam, like Kombi Yisroi, I mean, there's not too many Rambams. Anyways, he wrote the whole thesis about astrology, and I could read it out in Hebrew. Translated, it take much too long. But he was absolutely opposed to it. He thought it was sheker. It was like horoscopes today. And in fact, he calls it... Jewish people wasted their time with it. There's no basis in anything. I've studied it. I've analyzed it. I've read everything that there is to read about it. The Rambam writes. He says, whatever there is to read and to know about astrology, I read and know about it. And I'm telling you, it has no basis in anything. And then he says, the unbelievable statement, that because of Jewish involvement with astrology, she'ivdu malchuseinu, we lost our kingdom and our independence, ve'echarivu echaleinu, and the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, ve'higyanu aloin, and we were brought to a state in which we are now. In other words, we're wandering people. Shaveseinu chotu ve'enam, our ancestors sinned, And they're gone. Because they found these books on astrology, you know, and they got involved in this business of astrology, and that was going to determine the fate of Israel. And he says, Udvorim elu ikra b'idisori. He says, this is idol worship. What are Jews having to do with astrology? And he goes, and if you look in Hilchas Avodah Zarah, the Rambam in the laws of idol worship, he'll explain. He explains in great detail the laws about astrology and how it smacks of idol worship and Avodah Zarah and so on. And then he goes on to say something, and this you got to hear what the Rambam says. He says, and because our ancestors wasted our time in trying to find some kind of pattern of life and to guide our nation through some kind of astrological pursuit and the stars and, you know, and all of these things, and all these meaningless things. And because of that, he says, we never learned to fight. And he says, we never were involved in kivush or artzais, that it became necessary at certain times in our history to conquer the lands of our enemies, but we didn't do it. Ulafikach koru oisam arevim, and that's why the prophets called them scholim v'avelim. They were fools. And he says, the Rambam, the prophets called them fools. I say, vadai scholim hoyu. They are absolutely, unquestionably fools. Because they didn't have the sense to keep a strong army, says the Rambam in that letter to the French Jews. In other words, that's his conclusion from the astrological analysis. And he says, the Beis HaMikdash, the Jerusalem, that we lost our independence because we didn't have a standing army ready to defend and fight for the cause of Israel. And therefore we perished. In order to maintain a strong nation and to maintain your independence, Bederach HaTeva, naturally, this is the natural thing. You can't sit and wait for God to do miracles. We have to do what we have to do. You have to have an army. And that's why he had great affinity and great admiration for Bar Kokhba. At least he had an army. He tried, but that was the few amongst the many who weren't involved. So the Rambam doesn't say Sinas Chinam. The Rambam says we lost Israel because we didn't have an army and we didn't stand up and fight for our cause. Something to think about. And then he goes on to say again that astrology is all of this is nonsense, and we should have been using our time instead of analyzing astrological phenomena, raising an army, and so that we would be strong when necessary, and to engage in conquest when it is necessary, to preserve the welfare of the nation of Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, from ancient times, of course, that he's talking about. That's the Rambam. The Ramban has another interesting approach. The Ramban quotes, he brings down two parshas, Parshas Vayishlach, and in Parshas Bichukosai, Genesis, and in Bichukosai, the end of the book of Leviticus, I guess, I'm sure everybody's familiar with. And we've analyzed it. I've talked about it another time, Shabbos Shuva, Shabbos Agada, I don't remember when, the confrontation between Jacob, Yaakov, and Esav. And this confrontation is the confrontation of Rome. The rabbi said, Yerushalmi says that when our ancient leaders would go to Rome to talk, to negotiate, we have Israel, they would study this parsha, how Jacob dealt with Esav when he went back to his homeland after 20 odd years of being gone. And they would study it carefully. So the Ramban says, V'yaldati, and in my opinion, Gam ze yirmoiz, that this too hints, it's an allusion, Ki anachnu hiskalnu nefilosenu biyad edon, that we are the instigators of our own destruction of Rome, what the Romans did to us, but we instigated it. He says, we are to blame, the Ramban. Why? He's soon going to explain. Ki malchei bayasheni, the kings, the government, during the second base Amigdosh. Now, listen to what he says and think of what's going on today. Bo bebris im haroimim, they made treaties and deals with the Romans. Umehem shebo bremer, there were some of our leaders who went to Rome to negotiate. And then some of them came to Israel. Romans came to Israel to negotiate with the Jewish leaders in Israel, in Jerusalem. And this was the cause why our people fell into the hands of the Romans. We made agreements with them, and we signed treaties with them, and we brought them into the heartland of our country. Need I say what's going on in the next few days in Israel? And I don't think the Ramban doesn't say anything about giving your enemy bows and arrows when they come in to talk with you, which we have done. We've given them armament. Americans are again pressuring Israel that the Palestinian Authority, if you want them to control and maybe even ultimately destroy Hamas and other terrorist groups, you have to arm them. We're going to give them arms. We went through that already with Oslo. We armed them and they were using that to kill us and our children and our people. Because we brought them in the country. The Ramban says, "V'zeh muskar b'divrei Chazal," and these, what I'm telling you, says the Ramban, is mentioned in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Tes. It's in the Gemara. I'm telling you the truth. Umefursam b'sporim, and he says, and even the secular books write about it. He meant Josephus. If you read Josephus, he reads the Book of Antiquities how the Jews literally invited the Romans in, and then they took over. And they took over. Sounds like with the French and the Third Republic. So the Ramban here is not saying anything about sinas chinam. He's not saying anything about zealotry. He's saying that, as William Shire says, look at what happened before. It's not just one item. You know, like, you focus it on one thing and that's the reason the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. He says, you gotta go back and look at what happened, 50 years before. You know, he's going back 50 years, 100 years. The Ramban, who talks about not having a stable, ongoing, strong army. He's going back for years, before the Churban, before 100 years. He's going back probably 300, 400, 500 years, where we were lax, apparently, and didn't create the kind of army that was required. The Ramban goes on in Parshas B'chukosai, and he speaks about the Tochacha, you know, the list of warnings. In the list of warnings, what would happen to the Jewish people and so on. He shows, you know, the first list of warnings is the destruction of the first temple. The second list, Parshas Kisove, which we will read in a few weeks, is the second Beis HaMikdash. And then he says, Avdesenu Shavadnu Aroimim Biatsenu. He says, we were enslaved by the Romans in our own land, Sorehem, Moishtim Ba'aretz, and their officers became the rulers of the land, Umechabdim Aleinu El Kovid, and they placed on us terrible yokes, V'loichim Gufeinu Mimaneinu Kasher Yadiyu V'sporim, and he says, they took our bodies, our people, our possessions, and he says, and this is all hinted to in the history books, you can read it, and he says, and if you go back, King Agrippas, who was the king of the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, he went to Rome to make deals, you come here, I'll come with you, we'll sign a treaty, we'll write, and we all did it to ourselves. We brought them in, we invited them in. And he says, the Romans took advantage of us. They must have thought that these people are crazy. They're inviting us in. So fine, we'll come in, we'll make deals and treaties, and then when they're not looking, we'll just run the country and take it over, and ultimately it led to the destruction. Again, we're bringing them in, come in, give them Gaza, give them this, come in, our settlement, sure, they come in, everything's going to be fine. Yeah, I'm not a prophet, I'm not predicting anything, I'm just saying, you want to associate, you know, they say those who don't learn from history, I don't want to repeat, it's like a cliche, like Schopenhauer, I think, the philosopher, it's a cliche, you know, you don't, but it's a true, it's a true cliche, you know, if it's true, it's true, a cliche or not. If you don't learn from yesterday, you're going to repeat it tomorrow, and that's a reality. Now, the Gemara in Gittin, and unfortunately, we're going to start running out of time, the Gemara in Gittin, There you have the famous Gemara that everybody, and I'm sure you heard it on the tapes, I would imagine you'll probably hear it during the course of the afternoon. But the Gemara in Gittin brings down the famous story of the Churban Beis HaMikdash of Kamsa Bar Kamsa. Without going into it, just very, very briefly, the Gemara in Gittin and Daf Nun Hey on Mid Beis, there the Gemara goes through the story. I'm sure you know there was a fellow in Jerusalem, he's making a big party, a feast. He was going to invite his friend Kamsa. But he had an enemy who had almost the same name, you know, like Goldberg and Goldstein. So he had Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. And so Kamsa, he wanted to invite Kamsa. He sent a messenger, whatever, the postman, delivered it to the wrong guy. Bar Kamsa, his enemy, shows up at the meal, at the festivities. The host sees his enemy there. What are you doing here, you know? And all hell breaks loose. Terrible things begin to happen. So the Gemara says, He was enraged. He offered. I mean, you know the story. It's ludicrous. We've heard the story so many times. He said, "Please let me stay. I'll pay for my meal." "No, get out, get out. I'll pay for half the meal." I told the shul once. Nobody ever came to me when I had a bar mitzvah or wedding for my children. "Rabbi, I'll pay for the whole meal." You know, this guy offered to pay the whole meal. You know, there are a few hundred people. They said, "I'll pay for everything. Don't embarrass me. Don't throw me out." "No, I don't want to hear of it." He threw him out. Okay, goes out. So he's very upset. He's angry. He runs to Rome. The Caesar there, whoever, and he speaks to them and he creates a scenario. He's so angry, he plots against his own Jewish people to destroy the Jewish people. In other words, you know, the Jewish people, they are plotting against you. And they are not loyal to Rome. And they're not loyal to Caesar. And I'm telling you, they're after you. And they're ganging it. So he said, "What do you mean?" And so he said, "Okay, we'll send us." He said, "You know what? Send an offering. And we'll see if they accept it." He sent an offering, the Roman emperor, to Jerusalem, and he created a pagam. How do you say a pagam? A defect into the animal, which halachically rendered it that it would not be permitted to be brought as a sacrifice, because it's now balmum, right? It has a defect; it can't be used. He knew that would happen. The Roman Empire doesn't understand halacha. You know, it's a balmum; it's defective. All he knows is if it's not accepted, it means they don't honor the Roman, the Caesar, and they are indeed treasonous and plotting against us. So now they have a dilemma. What do you do? So the Gemara says, some of them said, you know, we said before, don't look at the law. Some said, we have no choice. Sholem bayis, our lives are at stake. Pekuach nefesh, we have to bring the sacrifice. I said, no, you can't do that. He says, Yomru, if you do it, you know what they're going to say? South of Lawrence, you turn back. You know what they're going to say if you do such a thing? Balei mumen kridon legabe mizbeach. They're bringing sacrifices that are not proper, defective, onto the altar. What will they say? Quote unquote, they. Whoever the they are, you can make up your own they. And so he said, so Reb Zachariah was a big gadol. You can't go, you know, they weren't going to argue with him. Can't go. So others said, okay, so what do we do? You know, we can't bring the thing. He's going to go back to Rome and say they didn't bring the Roman emperor's offering. So they said, let's kill him. You know, we have no choice. We might have to kill this guy, Bar Kamtzel, kill him so he doesn't get back to Rome. You know, so we'll all be in danger. Amalei, so Rabbi Zachariah again says, wait a minute, no. Meitu mum bekotchim, yore. Where's the, there's such a halacha. If you bring... It's somebody who wants to bring an offering that is defective. He deserves the death penalty. By the way, the penalty is malchus, I think. Lashes, malchus, but death penalty? You can't do that. You can't do such a thing. So, Omer Rabbi Yochanan says, An v'sonusoi shal Rabbi Zachariah ben Abakus, because of, quote, the humility of Rabbi Zachariah. That deserves a lecture into itself. Hachariva es beiseinu, our house, our Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. V'saroi pesecholenu, and then the sanctuary was burnt down. V'gili sonu mi'artseinu, and we were exiled from our land. Because of Reb Zachariah, but now sinas chinam is certainly part of this package. Bar Kamsa, remember, one hating the other. But Reb Yochanan doesn't say sinas chinam. Reb Yochanan says, because this Reb Zachariah, you know, because of, you know, you can't kill him, and you can't bring the offering, you know, so nothing happens, and ultimately we were killed. To blame. Now, what does that mean? What did he mean, Rabbi Yochanan, when he made such a powerful statement? And I know I once discussed this in another group a number of years ago. They were very upset because they felt, I said, I'm not putting down Reb Zachariah. I'm not putting down a gadol. Reb Yochanan is the one who said it. Well, I'm misinterpreting it. It's a matter of interpretation, I guess. But the Tosefta, in the Tosefta, there's a halacha discussion between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. They're discussing the laws of muktzah. The laws of muktzah about if you have bones on a table, or leftover food on a table, you know, you're allowed to touch it, not touch, you know, things that you're allowed to permit it to move and touch on Shabbos or not, muktzah or not. So, you know, one says yes, one says no. Yes, and Beis Shammai says no. Reb Zachariah, when he was asked, he said, I'm machmer. You know, I'm stringent. I don't allow anything to remain on the table. They don't have the problem. Omer Rabbi Yossi, so Rabbi Yossi says, this in the Tosefta, because of the humility of Rabbi Zachariah, Chorva Beis Hamikdash v'Golam Mi'Arzeinu. The Jerusalem was destroyed, and we were exiled. What does that mean? He's the same statement Rabbi Yossi is making that Rabbi Yochanan made. And what he is saying is, take a look. You know, here we have an animal. We can't sacrifice the animal. It's a balmum. It is defective. We can't kill him because what are people going to say? You're killing a person because of a bad sacrifice. So what is the alternative? Help us out. We got to do something. And he couldn't lead. A leader who has no opinion. A leader who doesn't take a stand. A leader who doesn't guide the people in one way or another. But it takes a stand. You might disagree, you might disapprove, but if you don't take a stand, you're not a leader. And if we have no leaders, then Israel will be destroyed. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. It's not the specific halacha per se, I think, but I think he's sending the message, no leadership. And even with a simple halacha of muktzah, I don't want you to be machmer. What's wrong with being machmer? You know, am I allowed to touch these bones on the table on Shabbos or not? You know what? Don't have any bones on your table. That's not the answer. But I do have bones on the table. We eat, we have chicken, we have bones left over, let's say, whatever. So am I allowed to touch them? No. Tell me, help me out. You're the rabbi, teach me. You know, don't have any bones. What kind of answer is that? You know, take a stand, either like Hillel or like Shammai, but tell us something. Rabbi Yossi said the man can take a position. You get a definite maybe. And this is not how you leadership. By the way, and time the Maharal of Prague says on this whole concept, it's not so simple, on this Gemara, Kamsa bar Kamsa, why is Kamsa mentioned, he says. I don't know if it came up in the video or not. Kamsa bar Kamsa. Because of Kamsa and bar Kamsa, Israel was destroyed. So the Maharal says, Bar Kamsa is the enemy. He came, he was embarrassed, okay? He was ridiculed and embarrassed. You know, but you know, you don't go to Rome and squeal on your own people. You're Maser, you mean, that's a terrible thing. You could have brought down the whole wrath of the Roman Empire on Israel. You know, so he's to blame. We understand that. But Kamsa, he's the innocent. He's the guy whom he wanted at the party. What does he have to do with anything? So the Maharal says, in order for evil to exist, in order for Loshon Hara and Sinas Chinam to be prevalent, you have to have a backer. In other words, Kamsa, according to the Maharal, should have said to his friend, the host, he's here ready, let him stay. What do you want from him? Okay, I'm here. You wanted me, I'm here. You made a mistake, your messenger invited the other guy too. Sure, forget about it. My honor is not hurt. You know, I'm here, we'll be together. Let him eat his meal and go home. Don't make an issue. He could have said that. But he didn't. He was the backer of the host. When he was being embarrassed and ridiculed, there's always somebody on the side that said, give it to him. He deserves it. What are you going to feed him? He shouldn't even be here. What are you letting him in for? And he says, that's why he's part of the problem, not the solution. If you're part of the problem, you share the blame. Maharal said, and that's coming from the Maharal. It's a very powerful concept because of there's a lot of truth to it, a lot of reality. So this sort of Yochanan ben Zakkai blames the destruction of Israel on the lack of leadership. It's interesting. The Rambam says it's because they had no army. They couldn't defend themselves. The Ramban says they made stupid treaties and they brought people into Israel and gave away Israel. They gave it away to the Romans. They brought them in and let them do what they did. Now Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says leadership. It's a lack of leadership. You see Naschinam not mentioned. Interesting. On all of these opinions, including the first eight that we went over in Gemara and Shabbos, comes Rish Lakish. The Gemara says Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish says, when he was the brother-in-law of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rish Lakish says, in Pesachtos Yuma, Daftes, Eloho Sonino Lechu, I hate Babylonian Jews. Now that's a powerful statement. You know, he was a great guy. I hate the Babylonian Jews. And he goes into great, and I see I'm running out of time. I have a funeral to go to. I feel so bad. I can go on. Rish Lakish, he understood. And if you think again what's going on today, Rish Lakish said the Babylonian Jews had an opportunity to come back to Israel. When Ezra came back and rebuilt the second Beis HaMikdash, thousands of Jews could have come back, and they didn't. And he believed, Rish Lakish, that the downfall, he said, do you think, he said, you know, Israel was a nation to be reckoned with. You know, but it was a small nation. And even in its tininess, the Romans had this thing that they had to destroy Israel. You know? So he says, you know, only a few hundred thousand Jews came in. You know, there were five, according to history, I'm not a professional historian, there were about 5, 6, maybe 7 million Jews in those days. A few thousand came back and populated the land of Israel. And there were millions who stayed in Babylon and Persia. And he said, you think the Greeks or the Romans could have been able to do what they did? Had they had the hundreds of thousands, millions of Jews there? It's because the population was so sparse they were able to do what they did. And he said, because they did this, they share the blame in the destruction. Now, I ask you, if there were 80,000 Jews in Gaza, not 8,000, but 80,000 Jews in Gaza, and I'm including myself, I'm to blame. You're to blame. We're all to blame. If you were to accept Rish Lakish, if there were more, you think they would have been able to get away with what is happening today? It's because you hear the press, it's only 8,000. It's only 8,000, 85, 9,000 at the most. You know, it's goonish. You know, but to them, it's nothing. To us, every Jew is important. But you see, they say, but in the West Bank, they'll never get away with that. Quote, the West Bank, what they call the West Bank, Yehuda v'Shomron. Why? Because there's 250,000-300,000 Jews there. But if there would have been 200,000-300,000 Jews in Gaza, and not to take away from them there, but an additional, in other words, if we in America and Canada and Toronto, if we cared as much as we say we care. This morning we talked about the Kuzari. And in the Kuzari, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, he writes in the book, and he's having this discussion, you know, between the Christians, the Muslims, and the Jews, the Chachamim, and you know, he's writing this, and the king, the Kuzar, says to the rabbi in the book, I accept Judaism as the authentic religion, and you say Israel is so important, what are you doing here? The rabbi reviewed his lady, he's talking about himself. What are you doing here? It's so important to you, why aren't you there? You're a hypocrite. You like the flesh pots and the materialism of the West. That's why you're not over there. What are you telling me about the importance of Israel? And the rabbi in the book says, you're right. I have no answer to that. I'm going to Israel. Now, I don't know how many of us, you know, are going to get up and pack and move to Israel. But there's some truth and some reality to it. So you have all of these reasons together. You have the reasons. Where does Sinas Chinam fit into this? But the rabbis do say Sinas Chinam, right? So if I was going to encapsulate all of this and quickly summarize, you see, different things happened in those days. You have to understand. A number of things happened. We lost our independence. Jerusalem was destroyed as a city. The Beis HaMikdash, our holiest place, was destroyed. We were sent into exile. Four basic components here. It's true, it's all interconnected. But one didn't have to happen because of the other. They could have destroyed the temple, but we'd all be living in Jerusalem. They didn't do that. No, we were standing, which is very unusual. Conquering nations rarely do that. They usually leave the indigenous population and control them and get them to pay taxes and do what they have to do. But they don't destroy capitals. You know, in the days of Hitler, Yamach Shimon, they wanted to destroy Paris. And the general, the German generals in charge of Paris, they've been ordered to put explosives around the Louvre and the Notre Dame Church and all these historic sites and so on, museums in Paris. And Hitler wanted them to destroy it. And they had explosives set up. And when it came time to sort of press the button, the general chickened out. He said no. And he himself wrote in his own diary, a German Nazi, Yamach Shimon, one of the generals in the army in Paris, said, I don't want to go down in history as a barbarian, but I destroy culture. The Germans still worry about culture. They killed Jews, but they're still worried about the culture. You know, he said, I don't want to go down in history as a barbarian. And so here, it's very unusual for nations to do that. And here, everything was destroyed. And so when you start compartmentalizing it, and you say, you know, we lost our independence because the Rambam is right in the Ramban. We lost our independence because we had no army. We lost our independence because they made deals they shouldn't have made with the other governments. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. If Jews can't get along, God's not going to listen to our prayers. We don't listen to each other. We don't care about each other. You think Hashem is going to accept the sacrifices of ancient times and listen to our prayers, which is really what the Beis HaMikdash is all about, and to feel the presence of God? God said, you don't deserve that. So the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And then we were sent into exile. All of these other things. you know, that the Gemara list. Now, the one final point I want to make that I think is very relevant. The Gemara says that we went over in Shabbos, Lo Yichorva Yerushalayim Ella. Everyone who gave their opinion was based what they understood to be the reason. That's the way the Lashon, the language of the Gemara. Lo Yichorva Yerushalayim Ella. Jerusalem was destroyed only because of. One says because they didn't observe Shabbos, they didn't educate their children, they didn't respect each other, or they treated their scholars right, they weren't ashamed. But each one believes that, which means nobody knew the right reason. Everybody thought his reason was the reason. Nobody can get a handle, only the Rabbanim Shem, only the Almighty knew the final reason. Each one thought, my reason is the reason. But each one had a different reason. So when people today come and say the Holocaust happened because... Because what? We're smarter than the Chachamim were in the days of the Gemara, you think? We know and they didn't know? We don't know the reasons. We don't know. Everything is Hakol Bidei Shemayim, right? Everything is in the hands of Hashem. What the rabbis were trying to teach us, the Chachamim in those days, that these were some of the things that happened that could have been possibly something to think about of what could have caused these things to happen. And as I say, it is our duty and our responsibility as Jews to learn, not only to learn, but to assimilate the information and to gain knowledge so we know how to handle things today. And I think there's phenomenal messages of what the Gemara and the Chachamim are telling us of what happened in ancient times, of what's going on in Israel today. And if we're smart enough, intelligent enough, and have enough Yirat Shamayim and humility, to look into Chazal, to look into our sages, and to look into the Gemara, what they lived through it. They saw it. They lived through it. What did they say? What did they leave for us as a legacy? We will learn from it, and ultimately, if we will gain the right introspection and perhaps have a collective tshuva, repentance of all of our people, we will merit to see that the Tisha B'Avs of our life will finally come to an end. We'll be Zoche to live to see the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, rebuilt, the Meher of Yemenu. Amen. Thank you.